Welcome to Between the Covers, a weekly KBOO program all about books and the people who write them. I'm your host this week, Ken Jones. On today's show, our guest is Bradley K. Rosen, author of the novel Bunky Spills, which chronicles one very long and eventful day in the life of a group of Los Angeles teenagers in 1976. The book was selected as a Powell's Bookstore staff top five pick for 2017. Bradley's work has appeared in The Frozen Moment, The Portland Review, Nailed Magazine, and City of Weird, 30 Otherworldly Portland Tales, an anthology edited by Gigi Little and published by Forest Avenue Press, which we featured on Between the Covers last year. Bradley was also a longtime participant in the Dangerous Writing Workshop under the mentorship of Portland's preeminent writing teacher, Tom Spanbauer. Bradley spent the better part of his adult life as a rock and roll musician, touring the U.S., starting in 1982 playing drums with the rock reggae band Little Women. He later joined Little Women's guitarist Jerry Joseph in the band Jerry Joseph and the Jack Mormons. Bradley now lives in Portland and still plays music, performing with several local orchestras. Bradley K. Rosen, welcome to KBOO.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming in. Bradley, before you were a published writer, I mentioned your musical background. You're a professional musician. Can you tell us a little bit about those early days?
The early days of the Little Women? Or
Yeah, starting as you're a drummer. So right. you started with the drums, and Little Women was your first band?
Sure, yeah. Well, I was living in Humboldt, and I met Jerry, and he was... He said, let's go, you want to go to Utah and start a reggae band? And I'm like, in Utah? I thought it was a very bad idea. My parents tried to talk me, everybody tried to talk me out of it, but ended up doing it, ended up being successful. You know, it was a good, really good run. It was a lot of fun. Did it for 10 years or something like that.
And you were also in his later band, which it's still around, actually.
Sure,
Jerry
yeah.
Joseph and the Jack Mormons
yeah,
played drums there. In fact, when they were a three-piece, right?
Yeah, it was a trio. I went back to school, got my music degree from U of O, and right when I was graduating, I was going to get my teaching certificate, and Jerry showed up and said, I need a drummer. And I said, I'll do it for a month, and I ended up doing it for 6 years or so. So, yeah.
But you got your degree and all that before you returned to his band?
Yeah, I got my degree in percussion music, yeah.
Just out of curiosity, why did you leave the Jack Mormons then? Because, like I said, they're still around.
I got sick. This book, it's part of what happened to the book, but I got kind of sick and I had to leave because of health reasons. So I was going to come back and then, it just got extended and Jerry got another drummer and that's what happened. So, yeah.
Now, how did you get from the music to writing?
I wrote a lot in the van. And read a lot.
While traveling?
Yeah.
And touring?
We were all really voracious readers, me and Junior and Jerry. And I wrote a lot. I mean, I've been writing my whole life. So, started writing then. And then when I had dreamed about being in Dangerous Writers with Tom.
Even when you were in Eugene?
Yeah. I'd heard. And I got an opportunity and I jumped on it. Yeah. And I got lucky, yeah.
Now, before I get to the Dangerous Writing Workshop, and we will, I can think of several recent examples of musicians writing books. Locally, there's Willie Vlauten, he's in the Portland band Richmond Fontaine.
Yeah, he's great.
He wrote The Motel Life, Lean on Pete, among other novels. Uh-huh. And John Darnell of the Mountain Goats, he had a recent book called Wolf in White Van. I was wondering, is there a certain influence the music plays in a musician's prose work? Particularly yours.
Oh, as a percussionist, I would like to think that the cadence of the words, the rhythm, really comes into play. I think. Mm-hmm. That's part of why Bunky's voice is so strong and so unique. But I think a lot of it has to do with just the rhythm. But I'm not, Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Bunky Spills, and I'd like to kind of focus on that. Now, the book tells the story of 18-year-old Emmett, and his nickname is The Bunky Spills, or Bunky for short, and his friends Big Pete, Evelyn, Angeline, and Wayne. And we should mention the VW camper named Courage, which plays a real big part in the book. Mm-hmm. And this all takes place over a very one long day and night in the eastern suburbs of L.A. in 1976. Is that out San Bernardino?
Yeah, right at the border. It's east L.A., right at the border of San Bernardino, yeah.
And was this based on your own experiences? Did you grow up in that area?
Yeah,
Did you know people kind of like Big Pete and Evelyn and Angelina and Wayne, who's
a couple of them? Yeah, but most of them are fictional. But I took liberties.
And, composites.
And, yeah. The house that where it takes a lot of it takes place is the actual house.
And that's a Big Pete's house, which is a pretty big house. And
It's actually those people that live there now got a hold of me and asked me out to dinner. I've never met them, and just because the book took place there. So yeah,
and they recognize the location itself as their house. And, We mentioned Tom Spanbauer and, of course, Dangerous Writing, and you had this real motivation to become part of that group. First, how and when did you get involved with his workshop?
Oh, boy. I can't remember. The year was 80. Oh, let me think here. 2007, I think it was. I'm not sure. I was there for 8 years. And I started writing Bunky probably 6 months after I was in the workshop. And it just morphed out of one story. Tom has an assignment, quotes, about a moment in your life that after you were different. And I wrote a scene about a party and music, and it just morphed into the book. And just kept coming and coming and coming. That book kind of wrote itself. Boy, those times at Tom's table, some of my best times of my life. Me and Steve Arndt, who's another writer and local writer, we always talk about that, how it's our time of our lives, you know. It's a great
I had some more questions about the workshop, Bradley, but why did you exit in 2015?
Oh,
you
had finished the book. Tom got sick. Oh. So, yeah. He had to stop teaching for a while. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. He's still kind of recovering. He's just had a... he's had a hard time of it. So
Well, we wish him well. I didn't know about that in 2015. Now I looked up a lot of Tom Spanbauer quotes. This is one in particular about the technique that he uses. And he said, "Writing dangerously is going to that place inside each of us that is hidden and secret. There's something sad or sore there. Mm-hmm. It's going to that place, investigating it, and writing from that place." I was wondering, did Bunky Spills come from that place in you? Yeah. And you mentioned that it started as this story in response to his introductory assignment.
Yeah, I was so lucky. Tom has a magical way. The basement, we always thought it was magical. But like I said, I never knew this novel was coming out of the one story. But my sore place was, when I told you I got sick, I got Hep C. And... I probably got it right about that time, maybe. Who knows? Because I never really knew. I didn't get diagnosed until 2008. But my sore place that changed my life, even though, later I paid for it. But there's a lot of illicit drugs and, shooting up heroin in this book and stuff. Looking back, those are my sore places, at least, Not now. I'm way over that. That was 30, 40 years ago. But I think that this book was part of it. It was trying to explain and make sense of that to myself 40 years later and give credence to it, even though I really just wanted to tell the story about what it was like then. And I got tired of all the movies that always... show drug use as the room starts spinning and the colors start going crazy.
Yes.
And it's not like, it wasn't like, heroin especially, I mean, it wasn't like that. And so, I didn't ever want to romanticize it either, but I didn't want to paint it as a bad thing necessarily either. I just wanted to tell it true. So, I guess,
I'll get a little bit more into the book too, Bradley, but I want to ask before we leave the workshop here, what effect did the workshop and your fellow writers have on the direction of the book? Were they the ones who kind of picked out that first assignment you did, that story, had more to it?
Well, they wrote it for me. No, I'm just sure. I still I am still in a writing group with Gigi and some Holly, a few of the others. But yeah, that group was a magical thing. As I said, I keep saying it. It was really magical, and we there was a few books. Margaret Malone, her short stories came out.
Yes, last year, mm-hmm. Book of short fiction,
and it's fabulous. There's a number of really great. All the writers in that group were just amazing. So, it's just like playing music. If you're playing music with really good musicians, sure, it's going to carry on, and you're going to write. But you know, just like in writing, or any discipline of the arts, I think that that holds true. You know. Maybe painting is a little different because you're mm-hmm. so solitary, but writing is solitary too. But the critique group, a lot of encouragement, you know, a lot of encouragement, but also they'll tell you if you, you know, but they'll tell you when your plow's in the ground. So that's
but gently.
Yeah.
So constructive criticism.
Oh, sure, yeah.
With a lot of love connected to it.
Oh, yeah.
I should mention to listeners, if you don't know Tom Spanbauer and his Dangerous Writing Group, I think his most famous student is Chuck Palahniuk.
Uh-huh.
And Chuck credits the workshop with Fight Club,
his first book. Well, Chuck came into, he came three times, I think, when I was in the, I was there 8 years. And he came down in the basement three times and, again, I was really lucky. One time he came in, and I happened to be reading, and I knew it was a great, it was one of my good ones, you know. And I was very lucky that he was there. And afterwards, he came up and said, "Hey, you know, you have something here." And boy,
wow!
I think I ran out to my van after the class and had a little hoot and holler in all the way home. And boy, that was something else, you know.
Even better, he wrote the blurb on the back, right? One of the three blurbs.
Yeah, he was gracious enough to write that blurb.
That's high praise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's a great, great, great fellow. Yeah.
You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO Community Radio. On today's show, we're talking with Bradley K. Rosen, author of the novel Bunky Spills, which chronicles one very long and eventful day in the life of a group of Los Angeles teenagers in 1976. Now, we talked about Gigi, who you're in, you met in Dangerous Writing, and now you're in a workshop with her. She actually connected us when I wanted to do the interview. So I went back to a blog post she wrote in March 2012, mm-hmm. so about 6 years ago. This is quoting, "On Wednesday, Brad Rosen is going to be reading from his novel, The Bunky Spills, which is in its finishing touches stage right now. I've had the privilege of witnessing much of the creation of this book, and I think you should be jealous of that because I'm head over heels in love with it." So the question is, that was 2012 and Bunky Spills wasn't published until May 2017. What happened over that five-year period? Was that revisions or looking for a publisher or combination?
Yeah, a combination. It was 2 years of getting the publishing done at Small Doggies Press and Maddie and Carrie. Before that, I ran it through that workshop three times. So that was the first time. I don't know how they let me through with the stuff I was writing. Of course, I think it was dribble. I still have some of the first drafts, and it was pretty horrendous. But they let me go because I guess the ideas and the voice and stuff like that. And then I brought through two.
So what didn't exactly write itself, as you told us?
No, it was a lot of work.
Okay.
Yeah, writing a book is not easy.
It reads like it writes itself, but I think that's one of the highest compliments you could pay an author.
Oh, yeah.
Because
well,
obviously
there's
a lot of hard work behind it
and a lot
of years that go into it. And yet, I read this in 2 days, and I just didn't want to put it down. It's one of those kinds of books. It just drives you along, the narrative.
Thank you. I think that's my biggest selling point, is that this book can never. You can read it one way to New York, and on the way back, you can finish it.
Yeah, for some reason, I was in Portland the whole time. If I knew a ticket was involved in it, I would have taken advantage. Now, Bradley, we talked about the influence of music on a musician's writing, and Bunky Spills is a very musical book. There's the content itself. So Bunky's prized possession in the book is a Hohner harmonica mm-hmm. that his dad gave him, and mm-hmm. he has a very estranged relationship with his dad. So he really treasures this harmonica. And then there's one passage, which if we read on the air would get us in trouble with the FCC. We talked about that earlier. But it's basically how one everyday physiological necessity, and I'm searching for words I can actually use at this hour of the day, can sound like a symphony orchestra in Bunky's imagination. And there's also the musicality of the language itself. You mentioned kind of the rhythm as a drummer. Does that part come naturally to you, or is that also a lot of work? And I mentioned that narrative drive. There's a rhythm that carries the reader along with the story from the first page to the last. And it's not a short book. It's about 250 pages.
Yeah. I think, well, Tom teaches us to write like we're having two cocktails, two people just sitting at a table. So it's very conversational writing. That's dangerous writing style. When I write, like I said, the first draft was just crazy. I write kind of a stream of consciousness, like a Kerouac or something, just real stream of consciousness.
And to get that first draft out.
Yeah, and I have to come back and work real hard cleaning stuff up. And that's where the critique group would come in too. And no, that's not good. That's not going to work. And I work pretty hard. I enjoy the editing, though. I really, that's my favorite.
Even more than putting down that first draft?
Yeah. It's hard putting down the first draft.
Well, yeah, it's the empty page or screen.
Yeah, it's hard. It's so hard, yeah.
Now, the book's narrated in the first-person voice of the title character, Emmett, or Bunky Spills, and it's a very unique voice. Again, I'm going to quote our mutual friend, Gigi Little. When I was preparing for the interview, Bradley, she told me, and I quote, "The writing in Bunky Spills is full of malapropisms and crazy language stuff." And Brad often talks and writes that way himself. I think it's something he absorbed into his character after the fact of his fiction writing, but I'm never quite sure. So this is a chicken or egg kind of question. How'd you come up with Bunky's voice?
Oh, boy. Part of it comes from a guy I work with, Brad Campbell. He's we do a lot of construction, and the guy talks like, we make up words and stuff. he mostly, he's got some words. So I had liberties to make up words and... That was part of the fun of it,
It's part of the fun of reading, definitely.
Yeah, because you could get away. Well, I cut a lot of them, but you could get away with a lot. That was a lot of fun.
Now, it'd be great to give listeners at least a taste of that unique voice. I was wondering if you could read us a passage from the book and maybe set it up a little first.
Yeah, this is after they get high and they're on the way back to, they go to a party because they ran out of beer and there was kegs there. So, yeah, it's Bunky's little thing about what it's like to stand in a beer line.
And they're still a little high on the heroin that they took earlier in the evening.
It had only been a couple hours since. Him and Wayne and Angelina went to a liquor store, and Wayne stole a couple cases, six packs of beer. And they ended up at this party. Anyways, here. There's an art to being one of those people that stands around a keg. Number one, you got to keep in mind that you're standing around a bunch of drunks. Number two, you have to remember you might just be one of them. I've heard people say that patience is a virtue, and I'm not exactly sure I know what that means, but I think I kind of get the gist of it. I hear people saying all the stuff like that all the time. Stuff like a snitch in time saves nine, and there goes the water under the bridge. I don't like to take a whole lot of time trying to figure those things out. Mostly, I just get the general idea, and I take that meaning into my intelligence, and then I move on. When I heard that saying, patience is a virtue, I just took it to mean that good things come around to those who wait. I didn't have too many places to go at the moment anyways, and the line was short.
Oh, thanks, Bradley. That gives readers just a kind of a brief idea, but I mean that voice is maintained throughout, and it's very funny, but there's a lot of substance to it, too. I mean, great characterization, and the story is just amazing. It's a very funny book, as we saw from there, and there's plenty of sex, drugs, and rock and roll in there. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily in that order. I think I would give drugs number one.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's also a very moving book, which I mentioned, and a thoughtful one. There's one other paragraph I'd love for you to read, Bradley, and maybe talk a little bit about. And this comes about 50 pages or so from the end of the book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I don't know if I can talk about this.
Oh, yeah. We didn't want to give too much away, but I don't think the paragraph itself will ruin somebody's
suspense. But the lead up to it is actually he's looking across the street, and there's a guy urinating.
Oh, I see. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I think we could say urinating.
Okay. Good.
Actually, we should say it several times.
Oh, no, we had to go through a lot of this book to find that. You must have.
I know. I told Bradley when we were looking for passages, we have certain FCC regulations at this hour of the day on KBOO.
There's a lot of bad language. And I don't know if you. It's just the way he talks, so I had to use it. So
anyway. Language that's not approved by the FCC. Put it like that.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. And the reasons why is trying all these drugs and sexes and rock and rolls as we were trying to piss off our parents, or because we wanted to be a bad contributor to the societies as a whole. Hell, we never even thought about them things, not even for 1 minute. In all the realities, what I did think was them drugs and stuff was that put here by something so we could all just get a little bit closer to them things we was put on this earth in the first place to try and figure out.
Now, that goes from kind of this very funny book all of a sudden to this extremely philosophical one, and Bunky's kind of reflecting there. I just love that passage.
Yeah. He has a lot of that. He tries to figure stuff out, and, I don't know, as we all do. You know,
well, I guess in some ways, it's a literary genre. It's a coming-of-age novel.
Even
though it takes place over the course of a very long day and night.
He experiences
a lot in that time and learns a lot and is a changed person afterwards.
Yeah, sure.
And again, I hope that didn't give too much away to the
listener. No, I don't think
the
so.
Listener.
Nobody will ever be able to figure this out by it.
I had mentioned kind of coming of age novel. It's different, but it reminded me a little about films like American Graffiti and Superbad, because they were kind of the summer after graduation, and there was a lot of characters involved, and there were some changes there. In fact, both of them took place over the course of, again, a very long day and night, I think, both of those movies. Mm-hmm. And even a little Catcher in the Rye in there, actually, with kind of a character coming to some realizations at the end. I was wondering what influences you have as a writer, maybe other writers or even musicians that inspire you?
Well, Willie Blotton is inspiring me now. It's 'cause he's so awesome.
My wife's reading his novels now from the very first one, and she just loves them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Willie, he's got a new novel out this month. Don't Skip Out on Me, I think it is. Yeah, it's he's amazing. So,
Do you know him personally then? Or?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Well, when I toured with Jack Mormons, we played the same shows a lot.
Oh, with Richmond Fontaine?
Yeah, with Richmond Fontaine. Wow. So I knew him then, but not as in a writing way at all. But lately, he's been really encouraging me lately. I only see him at gatherings, a little readings and stuff once in a while. So, my favorite, probably the classical writer, Steinbeck, Tortilla Flats and all that stuff. I love any story about humanity. Kind of the underbelly of society, kind of maybe.
I hate to admit it, but I listened on CD to The Grapes of Wrath recently, but I have read it. So this was about a year or so ago, and I've got to say it's one of the great American novels.
Oh,
it's just full of humanity, but just beautifully written.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. My kid just read that. He's in Thailand, and he read that. I can't remember. I wish I could remember what he said. It was a great summary of it. Something about the humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and then, of course, Kesey,
Run into him at all when you were at U of O?
Oh, I knew him from Eli Babs.
Ken Babs, brother?
And we had a band, kind of just a fun impromptu thing that we'd get it together and play, parties and stuff.
In Eugene?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so every once in a while, Kesey would come up and read some poetry. That was always him and Babs. Babs on his trombone and crazy. But I think Kesey once told me, this was long after the drug use, and Kesey told me, they were all going up to Mount Pisgah, I think, or something. I can't remember. Anyways, there was some drugs involved, and somebody offered me some, and I'm like, oh, I kind of don't do that. And he goes, yeah, your window closed.
Same as me. What a good phrase. Yeah. But it's such a nice way of saying it.
Yeah.
Rather than you're not cool anymore or
exactly.
something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, one more question, Bradley. I want to ask about your next project. But before I do, it seems we talked a little bit about it here. There's this great untapped motherload of stories from your years as a musician mm-hmm. and all the people you've met. Are you planning to do anything with that material? Is that the next project?
I don't have much interest now in doing anything about the road. One, it's a lot of it's still a blur, even though it's been a while. But there's been so many novels like that. You know, I'd rather write about fiction and stuff I can make up, you know.
So. Are you doing, are you working on your next book right now?
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to tell us or you'd rather keep it?
Oh, boy. I'm afraid it'll get stolen. It's such a great idea.
No, we don't have to mention it.
No, it's about a magical cat, a taxidermied cat. So, it's very, it's magical realism, but yeah, it's a challenge. It's coming along.
Well, Bradley, I loved Bunky Spills, and I can't wait to read the new book.
I really appreciate it, yeah.
Thanks very much for coming into KABU today.
Thank you very much for interviewing me, and thanks to KABU. This is really great.
We've been talking with Bradley K. Rosen, author of the novel Bunky Spills, which chronicles one very long and eventful day in the life of a group of Los Angeles teenagers in 1976. I'm Ken Jones, and this has been Between the Covers on KABU Community Radio. Many thanks to Bradley for visiting us at KABU and to all of you for listening. You're looking so tight.